Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting alongside Wes Hodkiewicz, coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, after months and months of previewing the NFL draft, we finally get to review the NFL draft. It is in the rearview mirror. It has happened. The Packers have added 10 picks to the roster going into the draft with 8. A couple of trades back, you end up netting 10 players. Just first off, your overall impressions of what the Packers accomplished over draft weekend.
Well, first off, I was wrong. I said the Packers would draft 8 players. They'd move up once, they'd move back once, and as it turns out, they move back twice and gain an extra couple picks, including the first round. But the guy I think everybody's going to be talking about from now until probably the start of the regular season, Kevin King out of Washington, 6'3" and still runs a 4.4 40. Really impressive young man athletically, and the Packers feel like they're getting a really good prospect to develop in that secondary.
Yeah, I think when you look at this draft, you start, as most of the time when you review a draft, you start with the first couple of picks, and the Packers drafted 2 defensive backs in the first round. Kevin King out of Washington, a 6'3" corner, and then Josh Jones, a safety out of North Carolina State. And in my writings on our website in reviewing this draft, I use the word dynamic a lot. And I say that because 6'3" cornerbacks don't grow on trees, and 220-pound safeties who can run a low 4.4 40 don't grow on trees either. The Packers found guys who can be difficult to find and add some dimension, some dynamism to a defensive secondary that didn't really exist before in terms of some of those measurables. And I think it potentially creates a really interesting mix with those new additions to the players that the Packers already have.
Yeah, and, you know, listen to Larry McCarron, the Packers analyst for Packers.com, had such an interesting thought on this, and it's that the Packers know what Joe Witt can do. He's done it with all different types of players, but you're giving him, specifically looking at Kevin King, a really premium talent when you look at the size, the measurables, everything you look for in a cornerback. You know, there's some questions about the strength factor, which is Elliot Wolf, the director of football operations, said you're going to naturally see with lengthier guys. You know, has to be able to make sure that he's wrapping up guys in terms of tackling. But in terms of the coverage ability and really being able to reduce the catch radius of opposing receivers, this is a guy the Packers have never had really before. I mean, they've had taller corners, you know, Ladarius Gunter, 6'2", Devon House, you know, just under 6'1". But King, with that speed and that size and that height, there's a lot to work with right there for Joe Witt and this Packers defensive coaching staff.
Yeah, he's another guy who runs in the 4.4s for a 40-yard dash at 6'3". And I think the biggest thing that stood out about him, and with Josh Jones for that matter, we heard the word versatility a lot. And when it comes to Kevin King, you're talking about a guy who's 6'3", but he can not only play corner on the boundary, but he can move into the slot. And a lot of times you think of a slot cornerback, you know, your Casey Hayward types, more of like your 5'10", 5'11", not necessarily the 6'2", 6'3" corners playing inside. But the Packers feel very comfortable with his ability to do both of those. And also then with Josh Jones, a 220-pound safety, 6'1.5", I believe, he's also a guy that they will look at in multiple sub-packages as a guy who could play some inside linebacker when you're going to go really heavy on the defensive backs, but you still want somebody with the size and the speed of an inside linebacker to guard against the run or guard a tight end, something like that. Josh Jones is another guy who can do that, like the Packers have been doing the last couple years now with Morgan Burnett.
Yeah, and the Packers, there's for a number of years they've been wanting to do this. You go back to 2012, you know, with Sean Richardson coming in from Vanderbilt.
That's right.
At that kind of size, 6'2", 215, 216 pounds. Jones are just like that in terms of his size. But then you look at the things you can measure, 4.4, 140, 20 bench reps on the bench, 37.5-inch vertical. I mean, those are really dynamic measurements.
Right, and those are the reasons that Josh Jones is drafted in the second round, whereas Sean Richardson goes undrafted. It's not just about the height and the weight. It's about all of these other things that are on film and that are in the testing.
And what you can do with it. And now you look at this corner, or I should say the safety group the Packers have developed, you know, 6'1 with Morgan Burnett, 6'1 with HaHa Clinton Dix, and another guy that's right in that 6'1, 6'2 category. The Packers have gotten bigger at that position, and as we we saw last year with Morgan Burnett, you know, being able to use him in a multitude of different ways, that makes the entire defense better. Mike McCarthy's big thing when he was talking about this draft class afterwards was that they need to get more defensive backs on the field. They need to get faster. They need to be able to keep up with these evolving offenses. And this safety group with Josh Jones a part of that is going to be a big part of that equation going forward.
Yeah, I see the Packers, and certainly what we heard from Mike McCarthy talking about sub packages, playing more defensive backs, this idea of, you know, safeties at inside linebacker, these 6 and 7 defensive back packages, all these different ways to try to match up down distance wise, personnel package wise with what offenses are doing. I think it's going to be a big part of what the Packers are going to try to do in 2017.
And these safeties, looking at Jones specifically, can hit. I mean, we saw that last year with HaHa Clinton Dix, you know, being able to really take his game to another level. And Jones, he really gives you some intriguing stuff to work with now for Darren Perry and seeing what he could potentially do now at the next level.
Yeah, no, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention some of those hits Kentrell Bryce put on as an undrafted rookie a year ago as well. But with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz, and Wes, as we continue to review the 2017 Packers draft class, a guy that is going to get the fans energized and a guy that the fans are going to be talking about here for a long time throughout his rookie season. The Packers draft Vince Beagle at the top of the fourth round out of the University of Wisconsin and a Wisconsin native hailing from Wisconsin Rapids. But just to provide the background, when the Packers are on the clock at number 29 in the first round, another Badger, T.J. Watt, and a pass rusher just like Beagle was available, the Packers decide to trade back 4 spots to the top pick in the second round of the draft, which is where they get Kevin King. The extra pick they picked up from the Cleveland Browns in that trade is the first selection at the top of the fourth round, and that's the pick that's used on Vince Beagle. So for those who are trying to make the comparisons, instead of having T.J. Watt at 29, the Packers get Kevin King and Vince Beagle instead. Time will tell how this works out for Green Bay, but Vince Beagle is a player who put a lot of good film out there.
He really did, and I know there's a lot of people out there saying already, we'll see what the kind of career T.J. Watt has. Excuse me, we've already kind of seen what J.J. yeah. Watt has done. But it's just important to keep in mind, too, if the Packers don't take or end up going with Beagle there, you don't get Kevin King, you don't get Vince Beagle. So this is an interesting part where the Packers are in right now. And for their point, you look at a young man here from the state of Wisconsin, his dad, a former state player of the year, his grandfather and the Wisconsin High School Football Coaches Hall of Fame. Just a really strong bloodlines as it pertains to Wisconsin football. And I thought one of the most important things and just impressive things he said during his conference call with the media, just what that moment was like for his family. You know, his father, not really typically an emotional kind of guy,
right.
Just, you know, crying tears of joy after his son gets picked by the home state Packers. And a little bit later, he ends up tweeting a photo of him in a Packer uniform when he was really little. So a nice moment to start off day 3 of the NFL draft.
Yeah, with a name like Rocky, you're not supposed to cry, right? That's not supposed to be part of the equation. Just kidding there. But yeah, Vince Beagle. Really, production-wise, it was 2014 and 2015 where he was really big on the scene for the Badgers. I believe he had 15.5 sacks combined over those 2 years. His production dropped in 2016. He had a broken foot, missed a couple of games, arguably maybe wasn't necessarily 100% for some of those other games through the recovery, so only 4.5 sacks in 2016. But you look at the totality of his Wisconsin career, a very, very productive player and a leader. A guy that all of his Badger teammates looked up to, was a leader on a defense that was very, very solid and very successful throughout his time as one of the top linebackers on the squad.
Yeah, Packers senior personnel executive Alonzo Highsmith was actually the one that went down to Madison to watch his pro day. And that was the first thing he said really jumped out to him, is when he stepped on the field, you could see how he commanded things, even in a non-game setting. I mean, just in terms of just being a guy that people sort of gravitate towards. And that's really important. important, particularly when you look at the defensive positioning of those linebackers and being able to have that communication factor and really setting the tone for the unit. That's something the Packers are obviously looking for. The other thing, too, with Beagle that I thought was really impressive, as you mentioned, end up having the foot injury, still only missed two games, stayed on the field, and obviously when you look at the Packers and where they took him, didn't hurt his draft stock at all. I think they understood the potential that was there. I think it was Elliott Wolf that might have said it in terms of really he played as many snaps and as many games as anybody in Wisconsin football in the last few years.
Yeah, so, I believe it was 54 career games over his time.
He was
time
on the field.
There. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I mean, that goes a long way, and certainly a lot of experience now he brings as he tries to make that transition in the NFL and in the Packers 3-4 scheme.
Yeah, I'll admit, I thought the Packers were going to address pass rusher, were going to draft a pass rusher prior to the third day of the draft. They ended up taking the two defensive backs, as we talked about in the second round with the trade back. They drafted Montrevious Adams, defensive lineman, in the third round. So then really what it came down to is with having that first pick in the fourth round, the very first pick on Saturday, after a ton of pass rushers had been drafted in the second and third rounds on Friday, edge rushers, I guess I should be saying, because some interior linemen are also considered pass rushers. Yeah. But as far as edge rushers, the Packers really went with the guy that they felt was the best of that bunch with that very first pick on Saturday and addressed it. And it just, and it's not because he was from Wisconsin, but it happened to be a Wisconsin guy and the fans are awfully excited.
Well, it is, it's kind of a chicken or the egg sort of thing. When you look at pass defense, the less amount of time a quarterback has to operate with, is going to increase the chances of being able to make a big play on the back end.
Right.
Whereas you also need to have the coverage aspect shored up because then that gives your pass rushers more time to work with. The Packers obviously felt, you know, not drafting for need, trying to find the best player available, they felt they got two guys that could definitely help shore up the secondary in Jones and also King. Now you look at Beagle getting him in the fourth round, you add him to a group that has, you know, it's returning Clay Matthews, they re-sign Nick Perry, they have Kyler Fackrell, who they're very high on, and then also Jaron Elliott coming back as a fourth-year player. They feel like this was the right guy to add to that rotation as they continue to develop those options behind them. Because as they talked about, I mean, you're losing Julius Peppers, you're losing Dayton Jones. That's 1,100 defensive snaps from a year ago, and they need to find ways to fill that. And they feel like Beagle could be one of the guys that could definitely pick up some of that extra work.
Yeah, one more story I'll throw in on Beagle. You mentioned his grandfather, Ken, who's a Hall of Fame high school football coach in the state of Wisconsin. When I first got into the sports writing business at the Wausau Daily Herald in the mid-1990s, I was covering the Wisconsin Valley Conference, and I covered games played by Wisconsin Rapids in that conference, coached by Ken Beagle, Vince's grandfather. So I'll have to strike up that conversation with him when he arrives in Green Bay. But with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford joined by Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, as we continue our review of the draft, the Packers talked a lot, Mike McCarthy and Ted Thompson talked a lot, as did we, about reinforcing the running back position in this draft. And lo and behold, Saturday rolls around and the Packers draft not one, not two, but three running backs in the within the final four rounds of this draft. Your impressions on that collection of guys being brought in at one position?
Well, first off, Mike, first time since 1974 the Packers draft three halfbacks, I almost said fullbacks there, in an actual draft class. Really impressive. But what makes it even something a little bit more impressive is the fact that 12 hours before they took Jamal Williams, one of the first questions Thompson was asked after addressing his first three selections was, well, is there still depth in this draft to address running back? Well, as it turns out, evidently there was.
Yeah.
Because they come back, and Williams obviously being the first domino that fell for them. Now, he's not what the Packers typically look for in a power running back. He's not really in that 230 range, 240 range. Only about 210, 216. So, I mean, at the same time, he runs with that power, which I think is impressive. And the Packers, I think everybody that talked about him talked about how he's your more traditional runs through the tackles, between the tackles type of runner. Had a little bit of an issue at BYU that he discussed with the honor code violation. served that 1 year, you know, away from campus, but actually made the decision to go back,
right?
Which was ultimately one of the things that sold the Packers on his selection.
Yeah, you had mentioned it in your story that you wrote Saturday afternoon about Williams, the loyalty issue that, you know, he gets suspended from school, could have gone anywhere that he wanted to, you know, transferred and played somewhere else. BYU was really the only school that had made a serious and solid Division I scholarship offer to him coming out of high school. He wanted to show his loyalty to BYU by coming back and fulfilling that scholarship commitment. And that says a lot about him. And what I'll also say, too, I was really intrigued by what we heard from the Packers director of college scouting, John Eric Sullivan. He was the member of the personnel department who was brought down to talk to the media after the selection of Williams late in the fourth round. And you mentioned his size. You know, he's somewhere in that 210 to 215 pound range. But John Eric Sullivan talked about him as, you know, this is a guy you want carrying the ball in the fourth quarter in the cold weather. You know, when the defense is worn down, you know, he's a tough guy to bring down. He's really kind of a cold weather pounding running back. That's an interesting evaluation to me about a guy who's not 230, 235, right, which there were a lot of running backs in this draft that did have that kind of size. So I'm really intrigued as to just how the Packers are going to use him in concert potentially with Ty Montgomery, the converted wide receiver who Mike McCarthy then said after the draft is the number one guy on the depth chart right now.
Yeah, and Williams, he's a California kid. I mean, so it's not like, you know, he came from an area where he dealt with it a lot. It's just something that seems to really play well into his skill set. And the other thing is, too, with that year that he had off, you know, he spent it down in Scottsdale, Arizona training, running hills. You know, his childhood idol was Walter Payton, you know, Eric Dickerson. Wanted to be that type of running back, that type of power, athletic running back. He goes back to BYU, has almost 1,400 rushing yards his final seasons, 12
big
touchdowns.
Year. Big year.
No rust whatsoever. And there's three guys here that the Packers have selected, and we got to see what they're going to look like once they get on the field. But in terms of being the first guy off the board, you could see what the Packers liked in Jamal Williams and why they feel like he could succeed in the NFL.
Yeah, the second running back the Packers take, Aaron Jones out of UTEP, which stands for Texas El Paso, for those who aren't sure about that. But really a workhorse back at UTEP, carried the ball quite a bit. But also a guy that we heard from Elliot Wolf with regards to Jones, and he said, you know, the measurables, he ran like a 4.5 40, but you turn on the tape and he plays faster than that. He runs faster than that with the ball in his hands. And so the Packers like the potential speed dimension that Jones could bring to the backfield.
Well, and it's interesting the parallels, too, between him and Jamal Williams. They also have the same agent, Lee Steinberg, which so they actually knew each other a little bit, too, going into this process. But both were lightly recruited and end up going to their respective school and becoming the all-time leading rushers at both of their schools. Now, in Aaron's case, him and his twin brother, Alvin, who are actually from El Paso, make the decision to go there, and then Alvin's actually still a senior running back for them, or senior linebacker. And meanwhile, Aaron, you know, just has a tremendous run there. I mean, now did have a knee injury that sort of interrupted some things for him, but came back again his last year and was really impressive. And when he made the decision to declare early as a redshirt junior, he said, I mean, it was a discussion that him and his brother had, you know, trying to make that decision if he was ready for this next step. And after everything, he felt like it was. And the Packers feel like they got a really productive kid who could potentially be a nice, you know, guy to complement the rest of that group.
Yeah, and then in the seventh round, somewhat of a surprise, the Packers draft a third running back, Devontae Mays, out of Utah State. And the interesting thing to me about Mays is that, you know, was really productive in when he first got to Utah State after going the junior college route, was all geared up to have a big senior year in 2016, dealt with some injuries, wasn't on the field nearly as much as he had hoped was productive when he was on the field. But you just wonder, because of that injury and because of the fact that his final season in college was not the big year he was hoping for, if maybe he's a guy who's drafted earlier, if not for those circumstances.
Yeah, I think he probably is. I mean, he has a lot of talent. So, I mean, that's going to be one thing for them moving forward now, to see exactly what was there and if he can maybe make that happen now in the NFL.
Yeah, all right. Well, with that, Wes, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, as we wrap up this first review of the draft class, I mentioned earlier the third-round pick, Montrevious Adams, defensive lineman out of Auburn, and I'm interested to see, you know, what he brings to the table when you look at the fact that the Packers drafted Kenny Clark and Dean Lowry last year, joining veterans like Mike Daniels, LaTroy Guyon, a free agent addition, Ricky Jean-Francois on the defensive line. So you've got a mix now at that position of veteran guys and developmental guys, draft picks from these last couple years. Adams will get thrown right in there, and we'll see what he can do. Then late in the draft, the Packers draft two wide receivers, D'Angelo Yancey from Purdue, Malachi Dupree from LSU, and then also an offensive lineman from South Florida, Kofi Amici, if I'm saying that correctly. What jumps out to you about these later picks by Green Bay?
Yancey, the 19.1 yards per catch his senior year. Now, I know there were some questions about the quarterback situation at Purdue and if he had to sort of overcome that a little bit. He wouldn't throw anybody under the bus, said he was fine with it. But, I mean, really, a lot of stuff you look for in terms of the production side of things. Wasn't invited to the combine, but still a lot of talent and ability there. Said when he came in for his pre-draft visit, actually did a Lambeau leap. So he already has that out of the way. And then Malachi Dupree is really intriguing to me. Probably the most intriguing guy in this draft class, just because coming out of high school in New Orleans was actually the number one recruit in terms of the receiver position by ESPN.com. Had a lot of potential, still has a lot of potential. Was a junior entry into the draft. And really, that was probably a thing that, you know, a lot of people said, hey, do you regret that? He said he has no regrets. He's happy to make that jump, and he feels he's ready to contribute.
Right. He enters the draft a year early and then ends up having to wait all the way until the final round on Saturday before he gets chosen. But a guy who's played a game at Lambeau Field already, much like Vince Beagle when Wisconsin and LSU played in that college classic. And then to touch on Amici, a two-year starter at left tackle for South Florida, sounds like most NFL scouts, all of his pre-draft workouts focused on him being at guard. So we'll see how the Packers mix him in. But a very well spoken, and sounds like a very intelligent player to add to a veteran offensive line room.
Yeah, and a lot of skill too. I mean, he's quick, he's fast, and he's strong. I think that's what allowed him to get drafted. And yeah, they'll look for him to stem inside a little bit and see if he can potentially contribute on an interior line.
Yeah, well, it's tough to talk about a 10-player draft class in one show. We did the best we could, and we'll talk about these guys more on our next show. With that, we'll sign off. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We will see you next time.